This program has been described by AudioVision. For information on over 400 video and audio titles, call toll-free 1-866-966-7667 or visit our accessible website, www.audiovisioncanada.com. The contents of this program are protected by copyright and may not be duplicated or used for any commercial purpose without the express written consent of the copyright holders.
Sarazen Couture Entertainment, Alberta Filmworks, Stornoway Productions presents Sam Shepard. After the Harvest, with narrative description by AudioVision. Golden stalks of wheat rise from a field, based on the novel Wild Geese by Martha Stenzel. Alberta Watson.
I've heard it said there's one moment in life when we're happy, and the rest is spent remembering.
A plain teenage girl lies in the field.
My hands are a record of my days.
Nadia Litz as Jude.
The earth is 8,000 miles deep, so I've been taught.
Evan Saba, Sean Matheson.
Above, leagues and leagues of air, leading like wings.
George Leach, Mayrin Bennett.
To what?
On green rolling land, a young woman sits on a trunk beside a dirt road. Jonathan Elliott, John White, and Leanne Balaban as Lind.
Hello!
Wearing a flapper hat, she stands and waves to a nearby lake, where two men in a rowboat trawl the water. The pretty young woman looks around and takes a drag of her cigarette.
Hello!
She waves to an approaching one-horse buggy that is driven by a young native man. Stops in front of her.
I was just dropped here. They said they wouldn't take me any further. I'm expected. At Caleb Gare's?
No one goes up that road.
Well, then why do you?
I go everywhere. I deliver the mail.
He gets out of the buggy, and the woman looks to the men in the rowboat.
What are those people doing? Are they fishing?
For a body.
As he drags her trunk to the buggy, a disconcerted look passes over her face. They ride up a narrow path cut through the wheat toward the Gare farm. Producer, Tom Cox. Executive producers, Suzette Couture, Martha Fusco. Doug McLeod, Pierre Sarazen. Written by Suzette Couture. Directed by Jeremy Podeswa. As the plain woman from the field, Jude, sets down a wheelbarrow and approaches them, the woman in the hat climbs awkwardly out of the buggy. She looks around at the windmill, barnboard farmhouse, and wandering chickens. Then smiles at Jude.
Well, you're from the city, that's for sure.
The woman looks down at her fashionable white clothes.
Meet the new teacher.
The teacher turns to see a solemn woman standing behind her. As the young native man, John, drives away, he passes three people in a field. One of them, a bespectacled teenage girl, waves and hurries to him. Taking off his hat, John stops and smiles at her.
I was looking for you.
Glancing over her shoulder, she beams.
I can't stay.
What's it matter?
Still smiling, she walks away. The solemn woman walks into the house, followed by the new teacher.
My trunk?
You can sit there and wait for Mr. Gare.
Glancing around at the stark furnishings, the teacher sits in an old wicker rocker as Jude comes in. The woman leaves, and Jude steps forward, assessing the new teacher. She averts Jude's stare. Two teenage boys walk in, followed by the bespectacled girl. They stare at the pretty young teacher.
I'm the replacement teacher.
The boys share a pleased grin. Patting down his hair, the youngest steps forward.
Hi.
He shakes her hand, then backs away.
Are you hungry?
Jude, you know Father does...
He's keeping her waiting. He likes to keep them waiting.
Jude walks away, and her sister follows. Jude returns with a glass of water for the teacher.
He's going to try and bully you. He starts by keeping you waiting.
Jude.
The solemn woman silences Jude, who plunks herself in an armchair next to the teacher. The woman peers out the window at a man approaching on horseback.
He's expecting a man.
The teacher glances at Jude. As the other children stand, hat in hand, the man walks in and kicks the mud off his boots. Wearing a waistcoat and hat, he stops in surprise at the visitor.
Mr. Gare.
She rises from her seat.
My credentials.
She offers him a folded sheet of paper. Considering her, he steps forward. Unfolding the paper, he reads.
Miss Lynn Darcher. Well, you've been shown to your room. Has my family introduced themselves? May I present my wife, Amelia?
The solemn woman looks away.
My sons, Martin and Charlie, and my daughters, Ellen and Jude, who I'm sure has already made an impression. Welcome to her home, Miss Archer.
Lynn Archer smiles demurely. At dinner that night, they all sit around the table.
We thank thee, O Lord, for thy bounty. We pray that our fields may yield their gold to us and that our bodies will not fail us in our labors. Amen.
Jude eyes Lynn, who lays her napkin across her lap. Caleb chooses food.
Tastes like pork. Is there no fish in the lake, Martin?
They were dragging the lake.
It was a drowning last winter. Our community, Miss Archer, is made up mainly of Swedes. They all wear black. Enjoy being miserable. They come to the New World to reap its benefits. But they refuse to leave their superstitions behind. No one may fish in a lake where someone is drowned till the body's been recovered. Who'd be man enough to catch me a fish? Charlie? Jude?
If I catch fish, can I go to Yellow Post on Sunday?
After a long, hard week, everyone journeys to Yellow Post. It's a social event of the first order. The young men eye the young women in their fashionable hats. Would you like a fashionable hat, Jude?
What for, to impress the pigs?
Oh, Jude, you should set your sights higher.
Amelia glares at her husband. Jude gets up and leaves.
We're getting the cattle.
Lynd watches her go. Soon after, under a darkening sky, Jude rides a horse across the pasture. She stops. Then climbs down. A young man in a suit and hat approaches. Seeing him, she smiles to herself.
It's been a long time. You look great, Jude.
She eyes his well-fitted suit.
How things to home? Oh, come on, Jude. Don't be sore on me.
She looks at him disdainfully.
How are you? Fine. Good. How am I? Thought you'd never ask. Couldn't wait to get back. Thought of you all the time.
She works hard to ignore the young man. Aaron.
You belong there, Jude. In the city. You want freedom. You got it there. No one knows your business. You can do what you want. You can be who you want. Who cares about wide open spaces when you got picture shows and streetcars and sidewalks, paved roads? Get every kind of luxury. Oh, that reminds me. Something I got for you.
He pulls out a silver compact.
All the girls are carrying them. Here.
Turning away, she climbs back on the horse. As she rides toward the farm, he sighs in frustration and looks at the compact in his hand. Inside, Lynd and Caleb read.
Do they always go to bed so early?
We're up before the sun. We live by the seasons, the harvest.
Jude walks in the front door.
Good night, Jude.
She pauses and turns slightly.
Good night, Father.
Then continues upstairs.
Forgive her manners. The children aren't used to company. We're so isolated here. Except for the presence of a teacher. As head of the school trustees, it's my duty to house the teacher and to evaluate his or her performance at the school.
Removing a floor mat, Jude watches from above through a crack.
Worried about coming so far north, Miss Archer?
Not at all. It's an adventure.
Is that the fashion now, to expose the ankle?
Heavens, is it exposed?
We are simple country folk, Miss Archer. I wonder, what will an adventurous young woman find here to amuse herself?
Soon after, Jude lights a lantern, and Lynn joins her in the bedroom. Turning her back, Jude undresses.
So, how far are we from the nearest town?
Far.
Lynd unpacks her trunk.
What do you do here? For fun?
Well, we get up at dawn, we eat, we work, we eat, we go to bed. Too bad you'll be busy teaching. You could be having fun, too.
As Lynd busies herself unpacking, Jude glances remorsefully at her. In another bedroom, Amelia sits brushing the ends of her long auburn hair. Caleb walks in and starts to undress.
She reminds me of you. First time I saw you.
When she looks down blankly, his smile disappears. The next morning, a soft pink light glows from the horizon, casting the first light over the farm. Ellen carries a lantern into Jude and Lynn's room and rouses Jude. As Ellen departs with the lantern, Jude slowly stands and quietly crosses the room. She watches Lynn sleep peacefully, then leaves. Later, Jude unrolls a coil of barbed wire as she puts up a fence with Martin and Ellen. Pricking herself, she tugs off a leather glove and sucks the nick on her finger. Lynd happens by and waves to her. Ignoring her, Jude returns her attention to the fence. Later, a group of children play outside a one-room schoolhouse. Lynd arrives. She stops and watches them anxiously. Inside, the children carry on rambunctiously.
Can everyone take their seats?
ignore her, and she slouches in defeat. Linda unfolds a camera.
I'll take your picture.
The children turn to her. Soon after, in front of the schoolhouse.
Smile.
They pose patiently for a group photo. On the farm, Martin, Jude, and Ellen continue working on the fence. Caleb rides up.
Start clearing once you're done here. And get to work on that chicken house. Should be done in the spring. You hear what I said, Jude?
With a single nod, she glares at him. When he smirks and rides off, Martin and Jude exchange a knowing look. Soon after, Caleb rides slowly along a ridge and spots a man with a bag crouched by the edge of the lake. Hearing the horse whinny, he sees Caleb and quickly covers his things.
Thorvaldsen. Fine day for a walk by the lake. Have you thought about my offer?
My land's not for sale. You've heard me say it often enough.
What's in the bag there, Thorvald?
Nothing.
Well, I hope it doesn't have gills. I don't think your fellow countrymen look too kindly on you fishing in a lake that still holds a member of the community.
It must be true what they say.
What do they say?
That you killed him, Eric Aronson. You could have helped him, they say. You killed him as sure as if you drowned him in the lake yourself.
Think about my offer.
Caleb rides off. Later, at the house...
Hello.
Amelia takes laundry off a line, and Lynn joins her.
The light's so beautiful. Season of mists and mellow fruitfulness. Close-bosom friend of the maturing sun. Conspiring
with him how to load and bless with fruit the vines that round the thatch eaves run. Keats's my favorite poet. Was when I was a teacher.
You were a teacher?
I taught at the same schoolhouse as you. I first got here.
You're not from here?
Amelia shakes her head and hands Lynn some laundry.
But you stayed.
I stayed.
Elsewhere, Jude runs through tall grass toward two small cabins. She steps into one, sets down her gloves and hat, and turns to a table where she finds the silver compact. Walking over, she picks it up and opens it. She admires herself in the tiny mirror, then closes it when Aaron walks in.
Miss me? You don't want to see me?
Saw you yesterday.
You found it.
What am I supposed to do with it?
Putting the compact down, she starts to leave.
I got a job in the city. It's a good one. I just came back to take you away.
He'd kill me rather than let me leave.
He can't keep you here forever.
Oh, yes, he can. He can keep us all here until Ellen goes blind and I go crazy and the rest of them die of old age.
And I'll steal you away.
Are you strong enough?
She tries to leave, but he grabs her and holds her tight.
Is that strong enough?
She slaps him. He hauls her to the floor and pins her down. They stare into each other's eyes. Tenderly caressing her cheek, Aaron kisses her. They kiss with mounting passion.
I'll go with you after the harvest.
Aaron smiles and kisses her again. They start to undress each other. At night, Caleb walks through a field with a lantern. Standing outside having a cigarette, Lynn turns when he approaches.
You have a lot of land.
It's the measure of a man, Miss Archer. The greater the spread, the higher the hat rises in greeting. Good morning, Caleb Gare. You love the land, but it can never love you back. This is no place for someone like you, Miss Archer.
Mr. Gare, you won't find another teacher who works as hard as I do or who cares as much.
Jude spies on them.
If I'm let go before I've had a fair chance, it'll look very bad for me with the school board. Since my father died, I'm the sole support for my family.
I'll do what I can to intercede with the school trustees on your behalf.
Later, Lynn joins Jude in their shared bedroom.
I'll intercede with the school trustees on your behalf. He does that to everyone. Makes them grateful, keeps them off balance.
Maybe I should go live somewhere else.
No one will take you. Housing the teachers is our responsibility.
Jude empties her basin to a bedpan.
He doesn't want me here.
You're right. Strange woman in the house. Who knows what kind of ideas it might give the children.
You don't want me here either.
I don't count.
She slips the pan under her bed.
Don't worry. It gives him status in the community to host the teacher. You're safe. For now.
As Lynn undoes her blouse, Jude climbs into bed.
Miss Archer, have you ever been with a man?
Almost.
There is no almost.
There is if you're Catholic. So what's his name?
Who?
You've got someone.
His name is Aaron.
Aaron. I like it.
Jude smiles. In the morning, Caleb shaves in his bedroom.
I remember when we first married, how you'd watch me shave. Like it was some great mystery to you.
Sitting on the bed, Amelia cleans his shirt collar.
Well, it seemed like we could talk when I was shaving.
Martin's getting your horse ready.
Well, Martin has a way of doing things without being driven to it. I'm half a mind to taking him with me.
Martin would like that. So would the others. They work so hard. I remember when I was young what it was like to ride across the country to Yellow Post.
Walking over to him, she hands him the starched collar.
It'd be sweet to go to church this morning.
Soon after, Amelia serves the family fresh-caught fish.
Well now, at last. Changing my diet. Well done, Charlie.
Charlie smiles proudly at Lind.
Anyone join me?
They all stare down at their plates as Caleb cuts the fish into portions.
Will you be coming to Sunday service, Miss Archer?
Thank you, Mr. Gare, but as I'm Catholic and there isn't a church in the village.
Maybe you'd like to take some of the children.
Charlie is pleased, but Caleb is stoic.
Well, what do you think, Martin?
Martin looks up.
Would you like to go to church?
I would, Father.
Well, I'd like to take you, Martin. Do you good, getting out amongst young people for a change. But I don't want you to be ashamed of your own father. You'll have to wait till some time when I have a clean collar to wear.
He smirks half-heartedly at Amelia, and she averts his gaze. Lynn notices.
You'd have plenty of clean collars if you'd buy more than one a year. You could do that instead of blaming Mother.
Jude looks at her father, who grins.
You're right, Jude.
Charlie looks to Caleb.
You know, no one will mind about your collar.
What do you say, Mother?
Someday, Charlie.
Dejected, Charlie drops his fork on his plate.
I've stood enough of his bullying.
Jude and Lynn walk in the woods.
I'm going to leave someday.
Where would you go?
You could catch me before I ever got to the train. We don't leave. Only Charlie's dumb enough to keep trying. Caleb's father farmed this land. We're born to it. We live here and die here. It's just the way it is.
And your mother? She never takes your side with him?
She doesn't care. Not for any of us.
You really believe that?
What's it to you anyway?
You don't know me. You don't know anything about me.
Tell me then.
The man who was supposed to marry me left.
I've heard worse.
My father's dead.
I call that lucky.
Lynn looks away, deeply hurt.
I'm sorry.
Sorry.
They continue walking. Lynn stops Jude when she spots a man washing himself by a stream. Jude strides toward him, and the handsome young man stands to greet them.
My apologies, ladies. I'm working not too far from here. Jordan Sinclair.
Lynn nods, but Jude stares him down.
This is Garland.
Didn't realize I was trespassing.
The dividing line is just over these trees.
Oh, I see. Guess I'll be on my way then.
He smiles at Lynn, who meets his gaze.
It's all right. Just thought you should know.
The women turn and walk away, leaving Jordan grinning. Lynn glances back at him.
He's like you.
What do you mean?
He has city hands. The dirt doesn't stick.
Meanwhile, people gather in front of the village church. Dusting off his suit, Caleb approaches Aaron, his mother, and sister.
Mr. Gare.
Sambo?
Your wife and children aren't with you.
No, not today.
Not any day, it seems. You're hiding them from us, Mr. Gare. I happened to see Jude on the road the other day. A boy, I thought. In overalls.
You might have mistaken him for a boy, Mrs. Sambo. Others aren't so easily fooled.
He grins at Aaron as he walks away.
All the girls in this county.
Mother, please.
Nearby, two men talk, and Caleb approaches them.
Any luck finding your brother, Aaronson?
As it's Sunday, I'll refrain from answering you as I should.
Suit yourself.
Caleb walks away, passing another group of men.
How's the new teacher?
I suppose she'll do, given we have no other choice.
You heard about your neighbor, Clovash? Poor man. He stands to lose his land to the government if it isn't cleared by harvest.
Grinning to himself, Caleb heads inside. Later, he rides his horse down a dirt road to a small farm.
You look well, Klobach.
Did I disappoint you?
The pallet man tends a garden.
Well, I heard you were off to the city for medical treatment. Came by to see if I could be of any help.
Could use a little rain for my plants if you can manage it.
I'll tell you what I can manage. Fair price for your land.
You think of nothing else, do you? You've yet to learn the value is not in the land, it's in those who walk on it.
Well, you're not likely to clear it in time, not in your condition.
That's why I hired a man to clear it while I'm away. If you listen, you can hear him.
Caleb glares at Klobach, who chuckles to himself. Caleb races off. He stops nearby and watches Jordan hack a bush with an axe. He rides away. At the house, Ellen plays piano.
Will you be hearing the sermon, Miss Archer?
Lynn joins the rest of the family seated before Caleb.
Better is a handful with quietness than both the hands full with travail. Better live here like we are, poor but content, than to seek the world in all its vices. That, Jude, is for you to think of carefully. For if they fail, the one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him that is alone when he falleth. Do they understand the lesson, Mother?
Yes, I think they understand the lesson.
Later, as Ellen and Jude gather firewood, John approaches in his mail buggy. Ellen hurries to meet him and removes her glasses.
You haven't been by in a week.
Didn't have any mail. I was thinking I'd have to write you a letter, just so I could visit.
She laughs self-consciously. Caleb steps outside and watches John hand Ellen an envelope. Keeping a stern eye on them, he walks away. Later, inside.
Be eating in the dining room tonight.
Ellen and the other Garrett children head to the dining room, where John sits with Caleb and Lynn.
John?
As Caleb pours him a glass of water, he eyes his stunned daughter. John smiles at Ellen. Later.
All of it, John. Everything on your plate was grown right here in this farm. All these acres, we've never had a hired man. The girls work right alongside their brothers. The land belongs to them as much as it does to the boys. They'll be rich when I'm gone. Land rich. And that's why the young men from Yellow Post have been circling around.
Ellen's mouth falls open.
Girls will have their pick. Young men with land. Fine homes. Cattle.
Ellen tries to look up at John, who is deeply hurt. That evening,
Ellen's life is so different from ours.
Ellen cries in bed with Amelia seated beside her.
He has no land, no future, except for what he can earn doing odd jobs. It's not good loving someone you can't have. It'll ruin you.
Amelia strokes her daughter's hair lovingly. Separated by a curtain in their adjoining room, Lind and Jude lie in bed, listening.
No one's been courting Ellen. Why would he do that to her?
No one knows what goes on in his mind.
Later, Caleb steps into the house and notices Amelia, seated in the living room sewing. He comes over to her.
What are you making?
A wedding quilt. Can't keep them here forever.
What, are they engaged?
She breathes deeply.
Or they just make themselves available to the first man that comes along, like their mother.
She looks up contemptuously. The strain etched on his face, Caleb rubs his forehead wearily. In the schoolhouse, as an older student cleans the blackboard, Lind is approached by Aaron's mother.
Miss Archer, Mrs. Ludwig Sanbo, mother of Emma. She's a good girl.
She's a great help.
Mrs. Sanbo presents Lind with a basket.
Some cakes I bake for you. Cakes such as you don't get at Amelia Gare's, I'm sure. Have one.
Lynn tries some. Miss Sanbo sits down.
What do you think of him, Caleb Gare?
Lynn starts to speak, but hesitates.
You heard what he did to Eric Aronson? There was an epidemic in the village, and Eric asked to take shelter at the Gare's during a snowstorm. Caleb Gare closed the door in his face, fearing the sickness, sending him back into that terrible snowstorm. He was nearly home, but he plunged through the ice. That is why they are dragging the lake, looking for the lost brother. No one with respect for the Aronsons will fish there, except for Caleb Gare.
At the lake, as Thorvaldsen fishes, Caleb walks his horse toward him. Spotting him, Thorvaldsen hurriedly hides his rod.
Rode by your place. See, you haven't started your hay in yet.
Oh, too much to do around the place.
Think you'll be thrashing by the 1st of September?
Sure. Got the crew already. A gang from across the lake. Half-breeds.
How'd you manage that? I heard they were all bucked up.
Fousey Aronson helped me out.
Caleb sees something.
He's been pretty decent to you, hasn't he?
He walks over to a sackcloth.
And look how you repay him.
Kicking it, fish topple out.
Tell me, how does Mrs. Thorvaldsen cook fish? With butter and herbs, Swedish style?
Don't play with me. Don't play with a man who's only trying to feed his family.
You have trouble feeding your family because you're lazy. And by the way, that half section of yours laying next to my land, you didn't feel like selling it? How do you feel about selling it now? I'll give you $100 for it.
$100 is nothing. You ruined me.
You ruined yourself.
Caleb turns away. That night at the table...
The Thorvaldsen half section. It's ours. Gare land as far as the horizon, right, Martin?
We're barely keeping up as it is.
We'll manage. Work is our salvation.
Martin, Ellen, and Charlie wearily hang their heads. Later, Jude and Martin repair the roof of an outbuilding. Jude spots Jordan approaching on horseback. Shortly after, Martin speaks with him.
How long have you been here?
About a week now.
What do they have you doing up there?
Well, I've been clearing land. Doesn't seem so bad.
Where do you get to the stumps?
Ellen comes over from collecting eggs.
Hey.
Lind approaches, and Jordan turns to face her.
Hi. It seems I'm your neighbor, so I thought I'd pay a neighborly visit.
Would you like to come in for some tea?
We don't have any tea.
Ellen eyes them with disdain.
Well, I come with an invitation. Dinner, music, witty conversation.
He turns to Ellen, who walks away.
Hope to see you soon.
Tipping his hat to a smiling Lind, Jordan waves to Martin and heads to his horse. Jude and Lynn share a grin. On a sunny afternoon, Lynn leaves the schoolhouse. Stopping, she looks off through a grove, then walks away from the road toward it. Soon after, on the Clovash property, Lynn climbs a hill. She approaches Jordan at an outdoor camp.
How about a neighborly visit?
What? Come on in.
Setting down her bag, she steps under the canvas awning.
So, what brings you here?
Do I need an excuse?
Not really.
I need human companionship.
Lynn takes a seat.
I qualify.
She removes the camera from her bag.
Ah, you're an artist.
I use it to look into people's souls.
He grins.
So what do you see?
She looks down into the viewfinder.
I don't know. It's a little murky.
Maybe I can help you out.
Okay, well, to start with, why are you here?
Came back a little shaky from the war. Consulted a doctor. Told me to convalesce. Somewhere quiet. Do a bit of physical labor.
Jordan sits facing her.
He also had Clovash as a patient. He needed to hire a man to help clear his land while he had his treatments, so patients changed places.
Lynn takes his picture.
Anyway, I was curious about coming back here.
You've been here before?
I grew up in a Catholic mission about 40 miles over.
What happened to your family?
My mother was an English gentlewoman. She died when I was born. My father entrusted me to the priest before he died.
That's all you know?
Maybe it's all I meant to know. My life is my own, always has been.
Lynn nods. Later, she finds Amelia in the Gare's garden.
Have you had your dinner, Miss Archer?
I've had an adventure, Mrs. Gare. I've been visiting with a most interesting man. A handsome one, too.
Huh? Must have fallen from the skies.
Actually, he's the hired man at Clovash's. But he's not a farmhand by nature. He's from away.
Amelia waves away smoke from Lynn's cigarette.
Sorry, my secret vice.
Used to be mine once, too.
Pulling out a silver cigarette case, Lynn offers her one. Amelia takes a cigarette. And Lynn lights it for her.
Naughty, isn't it?
Part of the appeal. So, this handsome stranger, tell me about him.
Well, it turns out he's from here originally. His mother died when he was a baby, and he was given to the priests at the Catholic mission.
Amelia's expression grows somber, and she butts out her cigarette.
I'm glad you found yourself a friend, Miss Archer. I know it's not easy for you living here.
She walks away. That evening, under a soft purple sky, Jordan continues working in the bush. Amelia sneaks up and watches him. She turns away, then glances back and leaves. In their room, Lynn and Jude prepare for bed.
I'm not going without you.
I'm making it my personal mission to see that you get out in the world, even if it only is next door.
You don't visit with neighbors. It could encourage us to have a normal life.
We'll get him to come too. Your errand.
Caleb will find out.
There's got to be a way. I want to show you something.
Lynn pulls out a photo album and flips the pages for Jude.
Look, this is my father.
He sits atop an early motorbike.
That's my mother. And those are my sisters, Lily and Ella.
They pose in 1920s swimwear.
I should take your picture.
I'm too ugly.
Don't say that.
I've been thinking about it. If we go,
we have to go on Friday. Caleb will be with the Icelanders, and he won't be back until late. And we have to go someplace nearby. We could go to my secret cabin. It's not far.
I'll tell Aaron and Jordan. And I'll fix you up. Some nice-smelling powder and a tiny drop of perfume in your hair. It'll be a party, Jude. With gentlemen collars.
In the evening, Caleb rides away from the farm. Jude approaches Lynn.
It's safe now. We should go.
Jude nods, and the two young women head off. Soon after, Aaron and Jordan arrive on horseback at the brightly lit cabin. Coming out the makeshift curtain door, Lynn and Jude greet them.
We've been getting ready for you.
Inside, Jordan dishes out food. And Aaron pours the drinks.
Jude.
Thank you. It's good. What is it?
Helmet stew.
Do you use the whole helmet or just selected parts?
A soldier's helmet is a very useful object. Mixing bowl, wash basin, pillow. Other things I won't mention. So you're a war hero. Yeah, I survived. It's about as heroic as it gets.
Aaron sets the needle down on a gramophone, startling Jude.
She's never heard a gramophone. She's never seen a moving picture. She's never even seen a train.
I've seen the flat car standing on the tracks.
Jude, just say yes, and I'll show you the world.
Staring into Aaron's eyes, she sips her drink. Lynn starts to dance, flapper style.
Very good.
Jude gets up and joins her. The men laugh and continue drinking. Later,
you fought in the war. You have a university degree. You're going to study law. What in hell are you doing here?
Lind reclines against Jordan.
I have an obsession with trees.
Across the room, Aaron cuddles Jude.
That's God in heaven scolding the angels. That's what my mother would tell me to get me out from under the bed.
Aaron notices Jude's tears.
Jude? What is it?
I'm just happy.
She strokes his arm around her and kisses his wrist as he kisses her head. Later, Lynn and Jude race across the farm. Standing in the shadows of the barn, Caleb watches them head inside. The next day, Jude gets up from the supper table and walks briskly toward the door.
Jude?
Amelia stops her.
Charlie will be getting the cattle from now on. Your father wants you home evenings.
Stunned, Jude turns and leaves the room. Later, Aaron waits in a field of wheat. Jude runs to him.
Jude, what happened to you?
I couldn't get away.
I've been waiting for an hour.
She pulls him to the ground and lies on his chest.
You feel good.
You can hear the clouds move.
Aaron looks into her eyes and they kiss hungrily. That night, clouds mask a bright moon. In the barn, as Caleb cleans a leather horse trap, Jude walks in.
You're late for your chores.
As she passes behind him, he yanks the strap from the rail.
What do you have to say for yourself?
She turns and stares defiantly.
What are you doing out there in the bush? You think I don't know?
He loves me.
Is that what he calls it?
Going away together. We're gonna get married.
He lunges, knocking her to the ground.
Stay away from me, I'm warning you!
Jude grabs an axe and hurls it, narrowly missing Caleb. He pounces and binds her with the strap. In the house, the others wait in the dimly lit living room. Caleb walks in.
Come with me. I need you to see something.
They follow him out to the barn, and he leads them into a stall where Jude lies tied on the floor, wrists and ankles bound. Lynd and Amelia are shocked.
There's been an attempt at murder on this farm. There's the proof.
He points to the axe stuck in the wall.
Now, there are no courts near enough, so the responsibility for dealing with the crime and the criminal lies with us. We have to do the best we can.
Amelia leaves.
For ourselves.
Caleb follows her, as do Ellen, then Charlie, and Martin.
Jude.
Lynd rushes to help her. Inside, Caleb reads. Ellen plays the piano, and Charlie frets. Lynd bursts in.
Mr. Gare, whatever it is Jude's done, how can you just...
Quiet!
Caleb pulls Lynd from the room, and Amelia looks away, agonized.
You will remember who you are, and that your position in this house is not secure. She is my daughter. This is my house.
He stalks away, leaving Lynd on the verge of tears. In the morning, Caleb rides his horse across the farm. As Martin kneels on a roof doing repair work, he looks down and catches Caleb's eye. Charlie and Ellen look at him too, then continue working on a fence. Caleb turns and rides slowly away from them. In the barn, Jude sits on the floor of the stall, tugging at a locked chain wrapped around her ankle. She sinks in defeat, trying not to cry. At his camp, Jordan spots Lynd in a shaving mirror and turns to greet her. His smile disappears when he sees she's sobbing.
What happened?
Caleb's a monster. I can't stand to see what's happening to Jude.
He holds his forehead against hers, and she cries on his shoulder.
Go away.
He leads her under the canopy.
Got a little money.
And they sit on his cot together.
We'll go to the cities down south.
I'm honor bound to stay till the end of term. I can't leave Jude.
He caresses her face.
I meant it.
Will you come with me when the term is over?
She considers it and nods. Kissing passionately, they lie down on the cot, embracing each other. That night, Lind walks across the farm to the barn. She finds it locked. Walking along the outside wall, she kneels beside a break in the barn board.
Jude, I've been to see Jordan. As soon as Caleb's gone to Yellow Post or anywhere far enough so he's out of the way, we'll get Aaron and come for you.
Jude listens despondently.
Caleb won't have you arrested. He needs you here. Jude, talk to me.
Jude fights back tears. Lind gets up and walks away. Jude frets gloomily. With a dark blue sky overhead, Caleb walks through his field with a lantern. He runs his hand along the tops of the wheat stalks, then breaks them off in his fingers and eats it.
The Lord has blessed us. The land is the purest expression of God that I know.
At the dinner table,
to work the land is a form of prayer. And today we begin that most reverent of prayers. Today we begin the harvest.
Martin and Ellen turn to him with dread. Soon after, in the field, a team of horses pull Caleb on a combine. Behind him, Charlie, Martin, and Ellen work furiously to bundle the cut wheat. As Caleb moves along, his three children continue to labor. From one pile of wheat to the next. As the sun beats down mercilessly, Ellen stops and removes her glasses to rub her eyes. Her brothers look at her concerned as she struggles to catch her breath. Caleb glances back at her over his shoulder, and they all continue working. Soon after, in the barn...
Ellen might as well leave her eyes at home as use them in the fields. Martin's not any better. We need you in the fields. It's too much work. You're to go from the house to the fields and back again. You see that room? It's locked. The axe is in the wall. It's proof of your crime. Now that crime can land you in jail in the city. You so much as wanted.
She sits expressionless.
You hear me? Any sign of rebellion, and I won't think twice about locking you back up here.
With Amelia looking on, Caleb kneels in the straw and unlocks Jude's ankle restraint. He walks out, and Amelia follows, leaving Jude to pull off her chains. Soon after, Caleb continues working the combine, while Jude and her siblings pile the wheat. glances over his shoulder at Jude and grins. Soon the field is dotted with mounds of cut wheat. Later, Amelia opens a wicker picnic basket and passes out sandwiches to Martin, Ellen, and Charlie. Holding a fourth sandwich, she glances around the field. With Caleb looking on, Amelia watches with concern. Jude vomits behind a pile of wheat. Her mother approaches.
It's hot.
Jude walks back to the others. Later, under the hot afternoon sun, Jude pumps water by hand. Amelia approaches her.
The threshing gang is here. There'll be plenty of opportunity for you to run. Be careful, Jude. You don't know what he'll do. I'm telling you this for your own good.
You're lying. That's not the reason at all. You're just afraid of what he'll do to you. You could stop him and you won't. You're a coward.
Amelia averts Jude's gaze.
When I was little, I used to tell myself that you weren't really my mother. Because if I was your child, then you'd have to love me.
Amelia shifts uncomfortably.
I don't understand you. You're my mother.
You're also Caleb's child. You're finding out what fate can hand you. We make the best of it. Why should you be so different?
Amelia strides away. Later, in the empty schoolhouse, Lind gathers up some sheet music, and Amelia walks in.
We have to talk about Jude. She's not a criminal. It's your husband, Caleb.
It is my husband who decides.
Lind looks at her, incredulous.
Your friend, the hired man at Clovash's. What do you know about him? I mean, my husband and I are responsible for your welfare.
I appreciate your concern, Mrs. Gare, but there's really no worry.
But what do you know about him, really?
He's not married. That I know.
You don't know anything about his family? Does he even know where he was from? Or where he was born?
His mother was an English gentlewoman. As it happens, he'll be 23 in a few days. He celebrates his birthday on the day he was left at the mission. That's all I know or need to.
So, you do know some things.
Amelia turns her back and leaves. That evening, Caleb steps into the house. As he takes off his jacket, he spots Amelia crying at the table.
He's back.
Caleb washes his hands.
Who?
My boy.
What?
My son.
It's not possible.
His name is Jordan. The hired man at Clovash's.
She stares at him.
How do you know? You're lying.
It it's him. He's back.
In the dimly lit dining room, Caleb sits alone at the table with his head down. He gets up and heads to the bedroom, where Amelia sits at the foot of their bed.
Have you met with him yet?
No.
Well, I suppose he's come back to find his mother.
She glares at him, her heartfelt pain reflected in her eyes.
He thinks his mother is an English noblewoman.
Amelia gets up and leaves the bedroom.
Will you tell him?
She steps outside. In the morning, as Jordan works on Clovesh land, Caleb approaches on his horse.
You're a fast worker. Clovesh was lucky to get you. Not many men will come out this way. I'm your neighbor, Caleb Gehr.
You're Caleb Gehr.
I understand you grew up at the mission. I think I know something about your mother, if it interests you.
He climbs down off his horse.
My mother was English. An English gentlewoman.
Is that what the priest told you? You're free to believe it, of course.
What are you saying?
20-some years ago, when the rail line went through, women followed the rail crews north to service their needs. Some of them gave birth along the way. Father unknown, mother disinclined to keep the proof of her profession. What are the priests going to say? Your mother was a fallen woman, or the Queen of England?
Caleb grins, but Jordan is not amused.
Why are you telling me this? What is it to you?
I'm aware that you've become friends with Miss Archer.
He climbs back on his horse.
I'll remind you that she has a reputation to protect, and that without it, she'll be ruined.
Jordan turns away, and Caleb leaves. Jordan cuts down a bush, then hacks at it angrily. Back at the Gare farm, Ellen and Charlie fork wheat onto a cart. Nearby, a steel tube shoots grain out of a thresher. The hired threshing crew uses a steam engine to power their equipment. As she forks the wheat, Jude grows weary. She takes off her hat and rests. Caleb rides up. Jude spots him and picks up her pitchfork. She gets back to work, and Caleb rides off. Jude continues pitching wheat onto a conveyor belt with Martin. She looks up and spots Aaron waving his hat to her from a distant tree line.
Have to take a break.
She steps down from the cart, and Aaron ducks in the tall grass. Jude runs across the field to the grass. Aaron pulls her to the ground. He beams at her, but his smile quickly fades at her sad expression.
Jude?
She collapses into his arms and rests her head limply on his shoulder. He pats her head comfortingly, and she's soothed by his embrace. Elsewhere, Lind walks across Clovash Farm to Jordan, who's stacking wood. Seeing her, he turns his back and walks away. Lind grows worried and follows him to the porch.
What's wrong?
I'll be done here soon. We'll be free and clear for Clovash. No reason for me to stay any longer.
Stepping off the porch, he strides past her.
You're leaving?
He continues stacking.
You were lonely. So was I.
Something's happened. Why won't you tell me?
We lose everyone. Do you know what it's like? Seeing all your friends shot to hell all around you.
You aren't losing me. You're pushing me away.
Something every soldier knows. So you gotta protect yourself. You're in the trenches. You want a cigarette. You got 3 seconds to light it before a sniper lines you up in his sights. One. Two.
Three.
She bolts past him. He turns and watches her go. In his rowboat, Aronson searches the lake with another man. He plunges the long pole into the water and finds something. A body floats to the surface. Aronson nods to his partner, then uses the pole to guide the body toward the boat. Later, in town, Caleb rides his horse down the busy main street. As he dismounts, Aronson and his partner approach in a horse-drawn wagon.
There's sugar, 20 pounds.
Caleb turns from a shopkeeper to Aronson, who hops down from the wagon and glares at Caleb as he strides past him, pulling a sheet of paper from his pocket. Aronson tacks the paper to a post in front of the general store, then faces Caleb.
My brother has been found.
He turns and addresses the men nearby.
Anyone who wishes can fish in the lake. I thank all those who respected our ways.
Fish is a poor man's substitute for what we eat. The finest beef for 100 miles.
You'll pay for what you did to my brother. One day you'll pay.
Don't blame me for your fool of a brother. If he hadn't been out in that storm, he wouldn't have drowned.
Caleb rides off. Soon after, he returns to the farm where his children sit waiting at the table.
There's going to be a jubilee for the harvest in town. You'll all be going.
Lind glances at Jude.
You'll show them. You'll show them what kind of harvest you've had, who's had the best and the finest crops. You'll show them.
Amelia joins them at the table. That night, lying in bed, Amelia turns down her oil lamp. Caleb stands across the room, slowly undressing. Coming over, he sits on the edge of the bed next to her.
You never cared for me.
She stares away blankly.
You promised me you'd forget him.
She turns and looks at him.
Every day I see your eyes comparing me to him.
finding me wanting. You hold on to him. Dead one. He lives more in you than I ever did.
Amelia turns away.
I'll talk to Aaron.
Upstairs.
We'll arrange everything. You can go to the Jubilee. You'll never have to come back.
Sitting on her bed with Lind, Jude begins to cry.
Are you afraid?
She nods. In the morning, Jude carries a basket of laundry outside to her mother, who strings it on a line. She sets it down uneasily.
You don't look right to me, Jude. Better not go to the Jubilee tonight.
I feel fine.
I can't save you from him. Not if you run.
I don't belong to you or him.
Enough.
I have to go.
Amelia stops and looks at her.
You're pregnant.
Jude looks to the ground.
You stupid, stupid girl.
Amelia walks to the house. As Lind walks through the house, she checks her watch. With a picnic basket, Amelia joins her in the hall, and they watch Charlie, Martin, and Ellen step downstairs.
You boys look fine. Just fine.
Our Sunday best. Hardly looks worn.
Jude comes down the stairs in a bulky wool sweater. Amelia steps forward to watch her. Then rubs her face wearily. Lind leaves them alone.
Jude.
The others join Caleb outside.
Well now.
He prepares a horse-drawn wagon. Inside, Jude joins her mother in the living room.
Before Caleb, I was pregnant. I was in love with a boy, Del, and we were to marry. But one day, he was working in the fields. It was harvest. And his heart stopped suddenly. School was closing, and I was meant to go home. But I couldn't tell my family that I was with child. Caleb admired me from afar, even though he knew that I loved someone else. He was kind and understanding. He told me that he loved me, and if I married him, we could keep the baby. What happened? He couldn't live with another man's child. So he took him from me and gave him. I didn't think I had a choice. Don't let anyone take away your child. If you do, you'll hate yourself every waking hour. I have something for you.
She holds up a quilt packed into a basket.
It's a wedding quilt.
I'll write to you if you want. Write to me.
Amelia hugs her. Moments later, Jude steps outside with the basket and wipes her eyes. Caleb watches her closely, then turns away when she passes him. Lind watches Jude climb onto the wagon with her siblings. Lind steadies Jude until she sits. Then rubs her fingers lovingly. Martin drives the wagon, leaving Lind behind. Amelia steps outside to watch them go. Jude glances back over her shoulder at her. Opening a large slat door, Amelia steps into the barn. She uses a key to open a locked stall. Inside, she pulls the axe out of the wall, then strides away. Later, Jordan continues clearing Clovash land. He spots Amelia approaching cautiously.
I'm Amelia Gare.
He steps forward to greet her.
I wanted to know you. Your father was a farmer. He was strong, kind. He liked to laugh. He had a very loving nature.
And my mother?
I loved your father. I would have stayed with him if he'd lived.
Weeping, they embrace each other. Meanwhile, by the edge of the lake...
Grace, mercy, and peace to you from God our Father and our Lord and Savior.
A black hat and coat are tossed onto a funeral pyre.
God give you by this word both comfort in the face of death and the will to prepare for your own. So that when he calls you from this life, you may, in the next world, meet your loved ones and your Lord with joy.
Aaron looks on solemnly.
Amen.
Aronson closes his Bible. That evening, the smoldering ashes of the pyre are stomped out by Aronson and his partner. Putting on their hats, they walk away. A breeze rekindles the coals, and some dry straw catches fire. Elsewhere, Lynn sets her camera on a tripod facing the schoolhouse. Standing alone in front of it, she squeezes the wire remote in her hand and takes her picture. Jordan approaches. And stops in front of Lind. She turns to leave.
I made a mistake. He said a lot of things I shouldn't have.
Lind stops on the school steps and faces him. He comes to her.
I'm sorry, Lind.
Lind weeps.
I don't want to leave without you.
Stepping down, she embraces him, relieved and contented. Jordan kisses the nape of her neck and blinks away tears. That night, in town, the Jubilee has begun. Outdoors, on a large platform encircled by a string of lights on poles, it's held beside the church. A band plays. The locals dance. A woman straightens a boy's bow tie. Martin, Ellen, and Charlie stand awkwardly by the food table. Charlie spots three young women, one of whom smiles at him. With a grin, Charlie approaches her. A young man reaches out for Martin.
Excuse me. I don't think I've met you before. My name's Ewing.
Oh, I'm Martin. I'm here with my brother and sisters.
Martin, nice to meet you. Have you met my father?
Glancing at both of her brothers, Ellen steps bravely into the crowd. She looks around, alarmed. Then hurries back to Martin.
She's gone. Jude, she's gone.
On a dark road, a lantern-lit wagon carries Aaron and Jude.
Don't be nervous. Finally gonna see a train, Jude.
Jude smiles.
Yep.
Back at the farm, Caleb carries a lantern into the barn. He notices the open stall and steps forward. He sees that the axe has been removed and runs to the darkened house. Stepping back outside, he scans the farm. Meanwhile, Amelia walks through a field. She turns her head and sees a column of rolling smoke from a field fire. She sprints away. At the farm, Caleb rounds a corner. He spots the advancing fire. He quickly opens the pen and releases the horses. Amelia runs up.
Lose everything! Do something!
Let it burn!
Ignoring her, he races toward the fire with a cloth sack. At the edge of the fire, he swats at the flames with the sack. The fire burns unabated. Caleb dashes to another section of his burning field and looks around, helpless, surrounded by the progressing fire. An empty wagon burns. Caleb watches the flames consume his livelihood. early the next morning. Charred stalks of wheat lie smoldering in the field. Enshrouded in gray smoke, Caleb sits in the remains of the wagon, staring at the ground. He slowly lifts his head and sees Amelia approaching. She stands before him.
The children are waiting. We're leaving you.
He fights back tears.
I remember seeing you at the harvest dance. Beautiful Amelia. Say your name over and over like a prayer. Amelia.
His smile is bittersweet.
I could have loved you, Kayla.
He looks away, racked with pain and guilt. Amelia turns and walks away. Hanging his head, Caleb rubs his face and weeps. He watches her go, silhouetted against the smoky haze and the dawn light. Later that morning, a train pulls out of a station. On board, Aaron rests his hand on Jude's plump belly.
The earth is 8,000 miles deep. So I've been taught.
He sleeps on her shoulder.
Above, leagues and leagues of air, leading like wings. To what?
Executive producers, Pierre Sarrazin, Doug McLeod, Martha Fusca, Suzette Couture. This described version of After the Harvest was created by Audiovision. The narrative description was written by J.J. Hunt, narrated by Melissa Unger, and produced by Jim DeMello and Ron Rickford. To learn more about described video, visit www.audiovisioncanada.com. Cast, Caleb Gehr, Sam Shepard, Amelia Gehr, Alberta Watson, Jude Gehr, Nadia Litz, Lynn Darcher, Leon Balaban, Jordan St. Clair, Evan Saba, Aaron Sanbo, Sean Matheson, Ellen Gehr, Maren Bennett, John Tobacco, George Leach, Martin Gehr, Jonathan Elliott, Charlie Gehr, John White, Mrs. Sanbo, Patricia Benedict, Anton Klovash, Tim Ketting, Fuzi Aronson, Andy Matten, Fuzi Aronson, Andy Maton, Thorvald Thorvaldson, David Lorraine, Schooley Aronson, Lynn Ival, School Trustee, Doug McKeag, Emma Sanbo, Idana Andrews, Casting, Marissa Richmond, Deborah Green, Costume Designer, Lizzie McGovern, Editor, Wheatby von Carolsfeld, Production Designer, Louise Middleton, Director of Photography, Gregory Middleton, Composers, Alex Pock, Alexina Louie, in association with Pearson Television International, produced by Stornoway Productions, Alberta Filmworks, Sarrazin Couture Entertainment, CTV, Canadian Television.